C1SP. Number 2A.
Then I gave you a few other references just to show that spiritualism is not the derivative of spirit. See, that one would think that spiritualism quite naturally would have to do with spirit and its realm of, and the spiritual realm, with the theory of spirit, with the signs of spirit. But as it is used here, it shows no, it is no derivative of the signs of spirit and of spirit. Then I put another question, question two. I remember from the very first time I read that chapter, well, many years ago, that I noticed something which made me think, namely that Mrs. Eddy says, when the science of mind is understood, spiritualism will be found mainly erroneous. She says mainly. She doesn't say will be found erroneous or wholly erroneous, but only mainly. I always was puzzled, and I felt, why does she say mainly? That means that in some respect, spiritualism, or that which spiritualism has as its proposition, some of those propositions must be right. And so I was wondering what she says in this chapter where Christian Science and spiritualism may see eye to eye. And I have given you a few references, but don't take them as authority. It's an indication of what we may consider, or what you may consider, as those little points where Christian Science, the signs of spirit, may be in concordance with the proposition of spiritualism. In No and Yes, Mrs. Eddy says under the title, is Christian Science of the same lineage? You say lineage?
Lineage.
Is Christian Science of the same lineage as spiritualism or theosophy? And then she answers and says, Christian Science is sound in every part. So she says that what she presents as the science of spirit is sound in every part, is wholly, therefore, true. And she does that, I think, with the authority of divine logic. It is not because she was, she was high-minded or conceited, yes, but she could say that out of logical reasoning, because we'll see that all she does in that chapter on spiritualism is to give a pure deduction from the statement that God is spirit and that God is all. That if we accept that proposition that God is spirit and that God is all, and if we deduce from that consistently without deviating in our logic, then all what she says is in concordance with that premises. So she can say that what she presents is sound in every part, quite in distinction to that which spiritualism proposes. So I won't go into those references. I gave them to you just as we go on through the whole chapter, that perhaps here and there you come to a passage where you can say, well, that what spiritualism says at this point may be in accordance with the science of spirit. Spiritualism has to do with spirits. But I think that not many of us are interested in spirits. We have here and there heard of spiritualistic seances and were quite interested in all what happened in these seances. And yes, I will tell you then a few things out of it. They are quite interesting. And they are true from the spiritualistic standpoint. They are true from their standpoint. But the question which we are interested in it, are they real from the standpoint of reality? That's another question. And we will have to distinguish that very clearly and properly as long as we stay with the chapter on spiritualism. Because from the standpoint of the spiritualists or the spiritists, those phenomena of spirits are real from their standpoint. They are real and true. But from the standpoint of reality, they are not real. And in this distinction lies our whole problem. That if we can see that distinction, because we'll find out very soon that we are spiritualists and spiritists in a big way, that we must be clear that what we call spirits are not very different from what we call people. And so I want you to consider this question 3, in which I have only taken references from the chapter. You could also take some from prose works on the question of what are really spirits. Well, to take a few references, she says, for instance, she says in retrospection, she says about the belief of spirits, she says, whatever divides mind, with a capital M, into minds, spirit, with a capital S, into spirits, soul with a capital S into souls, being with a capital B into beings, is a misstatement which interrupts the meaning of the omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience of spirit, capital S, and is a human and is of human instead of divine origin. So we believe in spirits the moment we do that, that whenever we divide the divine mind into minds, for instance, when we are very hurt, very downcast because Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so has said that, then we have accepted minds, many, and are downcast because we have taken them as real. We have divided mind into minds, and that's spiritualism. We believe that mind, the divine mind, can be brought down into a limited form of minds many. Or she says, in pantheism, she says, the term spirits means more than one spirit. In paganism, they stand for gods. In spiritualism, they imply men and women. And in Christianity, they signify a good spirit and an evil spirit. So you see what she says. She says, what are spirits? Spirits means more than one spirit. That's always the big tone that goes through spiritualism. There is one infinite spirit. And whatever deviates from that is spiritualism. So she says, that deviation is called in spiritualism, it implies men and women. So whenever we believe in men and women, let's be clear that we are spiritualists. We believe in spirits. We believe that the infinite spirit is held in a corporeality. And that what that corporeality says and thinks and hears and does and so is real. And we are spiritists. We are pure spiritists. We can't then anymore laugh at the cult of the spiritualists. We are worse than that. In the chapter on spiritualism, she says, on the question what spirits are, she says, the supposition that corporeal beings are spirits. See, she says, corporeal beings are spirits. Well, if we take ourselves as corporeal beings, and I think we have to take the mortal as corporeal beings, we have to take men and women as corporeal beings. As long as we take man, who is spiritual, as a corporeal being, we believe in spiritualism. We believe in spirits. We believe that that universal, infinite man, who is spiritual and has not one single material concomitant, if we believe that to be associated and restricted and held within the frame of a corporeal person, then we are spiritualists. Then we believe in spirits, and in spirits very many, and in spirits good, and in spirits evil, mostly evil. And our whole happiness is really in danger because we are spiritualists. Our whole happiness and joy which we have gained, which we should gain in marriage, is in danger the moment we believe that people, men and women, that what they say, how they look like, how they act, how they behave towards us, and so on, is real, then we are spiritists. We can't deny that anymore. That's spiritual. The science of spirit is what she says, it's the science of omnipresent spirit, of omniscience of spirit, of omnipotence of spirit. It's always omni of the spirit. And everything that limits this omni-es, that omni-sense of spirit, whatever limits that, is a spiritualistic sense in us. And we make out of spirit, spirits many. And the next thing we do, we make out of these spirits, good spirits and evil spirits. And then we are in the pitch. Then we have it. But who has done it? We. We have done it. They don't exist. They only exist in our human belief. That's why in that question one, the references there show that spiritualism is based on human testimony, not on anything. We will see how we build up spiritualism. Not God, not reality, not something else builds up spiritualism. We build it up. We are the originator of spiritualism and of spirits. We are it. And when we begin that false way, these spirits are very real to us. Or they seem very real to us. She says, its spirits are so many corporealities, limited and finite in character and quality. Now, do we know such spirits? Do we believe in spirits? Well, the answer to it is, if we believe in it or if we don't believe it, is the answer. If we believe in many corporealities which are limited and finite in character and quality, do we believe in some of these corporealities? Do we believe in some men and women who have a body and who are finite in their abilities and their qualities and their character and their abilities and their faculties? Do we believe in those? If yes, we are spiritualists. We believe in spirits. We don't confess then that spirit is God and that God is only spirit and that the only spirit is the omnipotence of spirit, the omniscience of spirit, and the omnipresence of spirit. My word, what a chapter we have to tackle. We suddenly begin to realize that that chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, isn't a chapter which argues with a sect or a cult which calls itself Spiritists, but that she presents here a chapter which concerns every one of us in its deepest sense, namely that we believe in minds many, in spirits many, in souls many, and in many beings. That we divide the one mind into many minds, the one spirit into many spirits, the one soul into many souls. Don't we say, oh, what a good soul she is? Don't we say, oh, she has a good soul? Don't you say that? We say so in German, huh? That's spiritualism. And we must free ourselves from that. Until we free ourselves from that, we will never find happiness. We'll never find peace. Just can't be done. Because we build up a universe of good and evil. That's what we do. We then build up a universe dependent on our thinking, on our testimony, on our sense testimony, on our of what we attribute to corporealities. It's all a build-up of us, the whole structure of spiritualism. We'll see that tomorrow. She says, the so-called spirits are but corporeal communicators. Well, a corporeal communicator, I know a lot of corporeal communicators. They criticize me from morning to night. And the biggest one is me. I criticize myself. I'm dissatisfied with myself, what I do. If I'm not watchful, I watch myself, how I criticize myself, how I debase myself, how I'm dissatisfied with me. What's the rubbish? If there is only one spirit, there are no spirits. If there is one spirit, then there is one soul. There is not many personal identities called me and you and she and he. We are real spiritualists, properly. She says, she calls the material personalities called spirits. Well, do we know some material personalities? And she says, material personalities called spirits. She defines them as spirits. And so on. You will see as you go through the text, just by watching it, just not by being preconceived and always think, well, spirits, that has nothing to do. I don't believe in ghosts and I don't believe in spirits. I never go to spiritualistic seances. So that doesn't concern me. Oh, no. It's the belief of dualism that is tackled now in this chapter. And that dualism and pluralism and polytheism, all that is handled because fundamentally the mortal believes that spirit is in matter, that spirit must be raised out of matter. He believes that spirit needs matter to manifest itself, that without a material investiture one could not recognize spirit, that spirit would not be tangible to spiritual sense without the material investiture, and so on. It's all that combining and mingling of spirit and matter. And whatever does that is spiritualism. And so we must free ourselves from that. She starts that chapter with a scriptural note from Isaiah, which reads, "And when they shall say unto you, Seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep and that mutter. Should not a people seek unto their God? Now, I have given you two other translations of this verse because I have seen so often that one doesn't understand what is meant with this verse. And funnily enough, the other translations give, instead of the last line, a different translation, meaning, for instance, from the Aramaic Bible, "And when they shall say unto you, inquire of men who have familiar spirits and of wise men who chirp and mutter, these men are not God's people." See, he translates it like that. He says, these men are not God's people. As the King James Version says, should not the people seek unto their God? He has put it into the positive. The King's translation says, why should we ask spirits? Why should we ask wizards? Why should we ask those who have familiar spirits? Why are we not going to ask God? That's the way the English King's James translation, you say, put it. The other translations say, why should you ask those who have familiar spirits? Why should you ask those wizards and so on? These people are not God's people, so why should you ask them? Now, you see, they put the last verse into the negative. But both translations really give us a sense. That's the beauty of it. I have noticed recently, I have so often with studying the prophets, I often compared 4 or 5 or 6 Bible translations, German and English from the Aramaic, the American translation, the English translation, 2 or 3 German translations, so on. And they're always different. Everyone is different. But I have always found how different they can be. If one has spiritual sense, everyone says the same. Even here, you see, they may say, the one says it in the positive, says, well, a man should ask, not wizards, he should ask God, spirit. And the other says, why should they ask spirit? After all, they are not of God. So the sense of it is in both ways the same. The spiritual touch of it is the same. And it just shows here that we should not go and ask spirits, people, wise people. Let's go to God. But when we go on in the second part of the chapter on spiritualism, we'll see then the difference when and why we can go and ask people about something. There we come to a very nice, beautiful distinction. So here, let's just see this. That the scriptural note introduces a chapter by saying, there is only one spirit, really. Go and ask the one spirit. Don't believe that spirit can be limited and into people, that spirit needs certain kind of people to interpret itself. Go and ask God. Then we have the second scriptural note. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Then said the Jews unto him, now we know that thou hast a devil. Here it seems to me that what he wants to show with this second scriptural note is to show that if we keep the first scriptural note, but if we keep that scriptural note and go to the one spirit who is God, if we go to God and ask of him, then really we shall never see death. Because the moment we go to the one spirit and therefore free ourselves of duality, free ourselves of the belief that spirit can ever be put into matter, born into matter, and therefore afterwards raised out of matter, then the question of birth and death is obsolete. Then the question of birth and death is obsolete. And what she will show there, then we will see that in the first part, she will show what this obedience to the one God will be through the first three subjects. She will show us that we have to go to the one mind, to the one spirit, to the one soul. And if we keep that, if we don't go to spirits, but only to the one mind, to the one spirit, and to the one soul, that enables us to see being, to recognize being as never having been born into matter, and therefore no need to rise out of matter, therefore no necessity for birth or death. He shall never see death. And in the fifth and sixth and seventh subject, she will therefore show how his obedience standpoint towards one spirit therefore helps us to see that which is called death does not exist at all, that does not exist in reality, but that we call it death, that all there is about death is that we call something dead, that for those who go through what we call death, that for those there is no death, that they just go either from one dream to the other, or if they are more advanced, that they go from one dream to the understanding of reality. But that for them, there is no death. But we are the killers. We always kill. Thou shalt not kill. We are the killers. We say that that spirit must be in matter, or matter doesn't live. And we say that matter, if matter doesn't hold the spirit anymore and therefore doesn't live, that it is dead. We call it so. But in reality, it isn't so. If in reality we begin through the first, second and third subject to see that there is one mind and one spirit, therefore one substance, one soul, therefore an unchangeable identity of being which never changes, but which is always spiritual and therefore never material, then there is no necessity either of putting life into matter nor raising life out of matter. Both processes of birth and death become obsolete in consciousness. They become obsolete in consciousness. And we are thinking on a line and on a plane which does no more accept the spiritualistic belief that life is once born into matter, put into matter, that then life lives in matter and invigorates matter, and that lastly life goes out of matter, and that is called death, that all that spiritualistic belief then is seen as ignorance, as pure ignorance.